President Trump fires National Security Advisor John Bolton.
This has been kind of a long time coming here. John Bolton has disagreed with the president on several foreign policy moves, but the straw that broke the camel's back here, so to speak, was the president's interest, continued interest, in meeting with Taliban leaders and officials from the Afghanistan government at Camp David to discuss a possible peace plan.
And at its annual showcase, Apple unveils new services and devices, including new iPhones.
The most important thing Apple did today on the iPhone front was clean up or clear up the lineup. In that sense, they told us what each iPhone is for and who it's for.
This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Charlie Turner in New York. We'll have more on those stories in a moment. First, here are some other stories we're covering. For the first time in years, the number of uninsured Americans rose in 2018. It was the first annual increase since passage of the Affordable Care Act. Wall Street Journal healthcare policy reporter Stephanie Armour.
What's notable about this is that, one, this is happening during a strong economy when a lot of jobs are being added. And two, where we're seeing really what's driving this is a drop in the number of people covered by Medicaid, which was obviously one of the main vehicles that led to expansion coverages during the ACA.
According to census data, the number of Americans without health coverage rose to 27.5 million last year, up from 25.6 million in 2017. The Trump administration unveiled new counterterrorism powers on the eve of the 18th anniversary of the September 11th attacks and imposed sanctions on dozens of individuals and entities allegedly involved with terror groups. The Treasury and State Departments blacklisted dozens of people, currency exchange houses, and companies allegedly associated with U.S.-designated terror groups, including Hamas, Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, Hezbollah, and the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he would annex a huge swath of the West Bank along the border with Jordan if he stays in power after next week's election, in a last-minute push on Tuesday to draw more conservative votes. If he forms a government and holds to his 11th-hour campaign pledge, Mr. Netanyahu would extend Israeli civil law to Israeli-controlled parts of the Jordan Valley and northern Dead Sea, a fertile strip of land along the West Bank's border with Jordan. The plan would seem to leave any future Palestinian state encircled by Israel rather than sharing a border with Jordan. President Trump has fired John Bolton, his hawkish national security advisor. On Twitter Tuesday morning, the president wrote, "I disagreed strongly with many of his suggestions. Therefore, I asked John for his resignation." Let's get plenty more on this story from Wall Street Journal White House reporter Mike Bender. Mike, how did these events unfold?
This has been kind of a long time coming here. John Bolton has disagreed with the president on several foreign policy moves, but the straw that broke the camel's back here, so to speak, was the president's interest, continued interest, in meeting with Taliban leaders and officials from the Afghanistan government, not just meeting with them, but at Camp David to discuss a possible peace plan. This is something that John Bolton adamantly opposed. And it came to a heated argument yesterday in the Oval Office just before the president was leaving for a campaign rally in North Carolina. And by Tuesday morning, Bolton had offered his resignation.
Did Trump say, you know, we can't work together anymore? Or did Bolton initiate the offer to resign? Or was it a firing?
Well, as with all things in this White House, it's the truth is a little fuzzy here at the moment. The president is publicly saying that he relieved Bolton of his duties, told him that his service was no longer needed. Bolton very quickly responded publicly that he resigned. I think the truth is sort of somewhere in the middle, and certainly the reality is that Bolton is no longer at the White House. It's our understanding here at the Journal that Bolton did offer to resign yesterday while in the Oval Office over this issue of meeting with the Taliban. And the president urged him to think about it, to come back. They can talk about it in the morning. And then our reporting is that while the president was in North Carolina at this campaign rally, the issue didn't really come up with people he was around and with down there, that if he was agitated by this and it was a moment of crisis, that it would have been something he would have vocalized to at least some people during that trip. But he didn't say anything about it. And then Bolton indeed offered his resignation this morning and caught not just the press corps by surprise, but the rest of the White House. It's worth pointing out that just an hour before the president announced Bolton's departure, the press office had put out a news release notifying us of a news conference that would include John Bolton at the White House this morning.
Obviously, President Trump is known for his bellicose rhetoric on so many fronts, including foreign policy. But it was Bolton that was really the hawk on so many issues, not just Afghanistan.
Yeah, that's right. Afghanistan, Iran, Russia. The Bolton was not just the hawk, but Bolton was much more aligned with kind of the traditional Republican Party and that sort of traditional foreign policy approach. It's President Trump who is sort of the anomaly here. We've asked him before because he's said that he likes different viewpoints in front of him. He wants his advisors to argue with him and argue with each other, and so is part of his decision making process. And we've asked him, who is the moderate in the room? Who's the dove, if you will? And his answer is that he is. He's the one who is tempering the discussion when it involves Bolton and Mike Pompeo and Vice President Pence.
I guess reaction to Bolton's departure was sort of mixed in Congress. For instance, Rand Paul supported Bolton's ouster because Rand Paul, the senator, Republican senator from Kentucky, reputed to be an isolationist, wanting to keep the U.S. out of foreign entanglements. Others were more or less supporters of Bolton, including Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina.
Yeah, and that again is lines up pretty well with the dichotomy in foreign policy. You remember that debate stage in 2016 with all those Republican presidential candidates on it, and which included Trump and included Rand Paul and included Lindsey Graham. And if anyone was aligned with Trump in the Republican Party in the Senate and in the majority party in the Senate right now, it's Rand Paul. Not that many more Republicans other than Rand Paul on some of these issues. So Lindsey Graham is definitely in the more of the hawkish wing of the party, would have been more aligned with Bolton when it comes to some of these flashpoints in definitely North Korea, Iran, Russia, and Afghanistan.
Okay, about replacements, who is going to be the interim national security advisor, and also what about candidates to succeed him on a full-time basis?
Yeah, good question. The interim national security advisor or acting national security advisor is a man by the name of Charles Kupperman, and he is the deputy on the National Security Council right now. So he's going to be sort of the temporary placeholder until President Trump announces what will be his fourth national security advisor here in just a little over 2.5 years. The president said today that he will make that announcement next week. The president is kind of known for sort of fuzzy timelines here, so we'll see if it's next week or not. Some of the names being discussed right now among sort of Trump's advisors include a guy by the name of Rob Blair, who is aligned with Mick Mulvaney, the acting chief of staff. He's been a national security advisor for Mick, which is kind of a new and unique position in the White House. He's had an increasingly large role at the White House. Folks have told us that he's in a lot of national security meetings now that John Bolton has not been invited to. And then another name to keep watch on for right now is Rick Grenell, the ambassador to Germany, who has some close relationships with some of the president's supporters and family.
Wall Street Journal White House reporter Mike Bender. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you.
On Tuesday, Apple put on its product showcase, the company's eagerly awaited annual event. Let's find out what new devices and services Apple has in store for us from the Wall Street Journal's Joanna Stern, who's reporting from the event held at Apple's headquarters in Cupertino, California.
Apple kicked off this event here in Cupertino today, not talking about hardware, but talking about its services business, which was something they held an event here in March dedicated to. And the news here today was that they announced the pricing of both their Apple Arcade offering, which offers exclusive games through the App Store, over 100 exclusive games, and the price there is $5 a month. And they also announced the pricing on the Apple TV Plus, which is also $5 a month, a lot less than what we all thought would be around $10 a month. And this is really striking, especially when you look at the other competition in the landscape. The other big news here is that Apple is going to offer Apple TV Plus free to those who buy a new iPhone this year, a new iPad, a new Mac. Any of the Apple devices will come free with Apple TV Plus, which gives a really big built-in user base to this brand new video streaming service. Apple also announced a new Apple Watch. I was pretty disappointed in the amount of new features in the Apple Watch, but we did get one big one that a lot of us have been waiting for, and that's an always-on display. Typically in the past when you've used your Apple Watch, you have to tap the display or raise your arm to wake the display up. Now the display will always be on, just like a regular watch. So if your arm is on the table, you'll be able to glance at it and see what time it is. Apple announced three iPhones today, and I think the most important thing Apple did today on the iPhone front was clean up or clear up the lineup. In that sense, they told us what each iPhone is for and who it's for. On the iPhone 11, it starts at $700, and this is pretty much the best iPhone for most people. Two cameras, nice screen, different colors, all the new modern features. But if you want more than that and you want to pay $1,000 or more for a phone, you'll go up to the new Pro lines. The iPhone 11 Pro and the iPhone 11 Pro Max have three cameras on it. They've improved the camera system there. They all have the same processors, but those Pro models are really for the pros, just like a MacBook Pro owner would buy a MacBook Pro. The main headline today on the iPhones were the cameras. They spent a lot of time on stage today talking about the camera systems, how you'll be able to take better video, better photos with these three cameras, and a combination of new software. The thing I'm looking forward most to testing is a new night mode. If you take a pretty dark photo, software compression in the background or software systems in the background will work to make it lighter. I would say today was a pretty much ho-hum day for Apple. It wasn't boring, but it wasn't also super exciting. We had expected a lot of these features, and there will certainly be improvements for people who are looking to upgrade, but there is no reason to run out and buy these new phones or watch.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Joanna Stern. Thanks, Joanna. And that's what's news for Tuesday afternoon. I'm Charlie Turner from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.